I think the crisis of our perception of God is felt also very deeply by these angels who seem to be lost, moving around earth without any direction. These are very troubling poems, but at the same time, Jaime reveals a great imagination in trying to create a vision of angels in the year 2023.
Angels, exiled to low-grade hotels. They could be anyone. In Jaime Barrios Carrillo's two poems published in the Asymptote Journal, we meet these uncelebrated angels, Ángeles Sin Dios, the godless angels. They inhabit a place translator David Unger calls a pedestrian purgatory, where they are unsure of their next move in this world. I'm Vincent Hostack, and this is the Asymptote Podcast. In this episode, conversations and readings of poems that come from the rarely disclosed and rich world of interiority. These poems make their debut in the English language alongside nonfiction, drama, poetry, fiction, criticism, interviews, and visual art, such as Emily Wilson discussing her translation of Homer's Odyssey, poetry from award-winning writer Alina Svetitska, and writers from around the globe, including writer and editor Ilya Kaminsky, Romanian translator and translation studies scholar Michael Cronin, poet Nam Le, and the poetry of Samer Abu Hawash, translated from Arabic. In the landmark 50th issue of the Asymptote Journal, published just this January 2024. I hope you will take time to read this issue and those archived, as I know I will for many more weeks. It's free to read, including selections from the archive, and there are many ways to support the journal at asymptotejournal.com. Also, this podcast is returning after a 2-year absence. We plan to bring you conversations and readings adjacent to each forthcoming issue, as well as unique explorations into topics in world literature and the art of translation. Now, Angels in Exile, the poetry of Jaime Barrios Carrillo. Carrillo is known as a political activist and columnist. He was born in Guatemala City in 1954 and has lived in Stockholm since 1981. He has degrees in philosophy and social anthropology from the Universidad de San Carlos in Guatemala, where he also taught. He is also a poet, and his collection of poetry, Ciudades Errantes, received special mention by the Casa de las Américas jury in 1996. Hotels and Godless Angels were translated from Carrillo's 2022 collection, Ángeles Sin Dios. We begin in New York with esteemed author-translator David Unger discussing and reading his translations of two poems by Guatemalan writer Jaime Barrios Carrillo. David Unger, thank you so much for joining us today on the Asymptote Podcast.
Thanks, Vincent. I'm really glad to be here, and I'm looking forward to your questions and for this dialogue.
So just to set the stage a bit, you've translated 16 titles of literature, including Mr. President, authored by Miguel Ángel Asturias, the Nobel Prize-winning Guatemalan author, Miriam Salero's collection of folk tales from around the world, Folk Tales for Fearless Girls, and the Guatemalan pre-Columbian creation myth, the Popol Vuh. So in the new issue are two wonderful poems by Jaime Barrios Carrillo. How did you discover Carrillo's work and embark upon the translation of these two poems?
Well, you know, I've known Jaime for, I would say, at least 15 years. He's been living in exile in Stockholm since 1981. I don't know the details, but I would imagine that he left Guatemala during the armed conflict, as so many of my friends in Guatemala had to do. Either they were involved in a guerrilla movement, or they were publishing broadsides, or they were just speaking up, but they had to leave the country. Jaime has been distinguished primarily as an essayist and a columnist. I was very surprised when, about a little over a year ago, I received a book in the mail entitled Ángeles Sin Dios, or loosely translated as Angels Without God. And I realized that, you know, he's one of the most thoughtful and intelligent critics that Guatemala has had, but I wasn't aware that he was also a poet.
I believe that we've been treated to the first English language translations of Carrillo's poems, or perhaps any of his work.
Yes, I think in what I was trying to say in my previous remarks is that he's really not distinguished himself as a writer. And I think, Vincent, you and I know that there are people who practice all forms of literary arts, but they're also writing in the darkness and hidden texts. You know, yes, these are his first publications in English. I think he's had a couple of poems published previously in French. Basically, Asymptote is introducing Jaime Barrios Carrillo to the Anglo world.
I would love to talk about the themes in both these poems, as well as the process of translating the work. But might we start, would you share a reading of the two texts?
Would you like me to read them in Spanish or in English translation?
I'm sure our English language audience would love to hear this in English. And perhaps later in the discussion, we can hear a segment in the original language.
So I believe I sent three poems to Asymptote, and two were selected. The first poem that I'm going to read is entitled Hotels. I'm thinking about those zero-star hotels where angels stay, sharing a building with traveling salesmen and country merchants, who after a hard day of trying to please customers, splash on a lavender aftershave and put shiny gel in their hair to go out to bars for a one-night stand. First, they call their wives to tell them that business was good and they'll soon be home. But angels descend to cities for other reasons, messengers from impenetrable places or like guardians of people invoking them. Perhaps they've been kicked out of heaven for political reasons. Angels prefer to stay in their rooms listening to the radio or watching TV, trimming their toenails or ironing their enormous white wings that they then drape on special hangers next to the clothes they'll wear the following day. They're disguised as humans, not to be found out and have people make fun of them. In the loneliness of night, they recall the past and regret finding themselves on a crappy planet. They call room service, but no one at reception picks up, and they go to bed hungry, convinced they come from paradise, where there's loads of toilet paper and no drunks scream at each other or roaches scurry down corridors of cut-rate hotels. Dejected by the day's ordeal, they stretch out naked in bed, and before falling asleep, their tired eyes gaze up at the ceiling, as if the heavenly sky were a field ready for plowing. But it's a cracked ceiling in a decrepit building many believe is about to collapse. The angels look up in silence, feeling sorry for themselves, because these cracks remind them of people. The second poem I'm going to read is titled Godless Angels. Back then, the mirror said to its disciples, "No one will reign over anyone." The world was full of whispers and emptiness. In the distance, horses galloped. Nothing existed. Here only a smothered bolt of lightning and crickets chewing the leaves of time. I imagined a global brain where the vestiges of a previous era was ruled by imagining an even older and more diffused time. But on a moonless night, I understood that light doesn't flow from the sky, but hides out in its own cave. The twilight, however, is a fallen angel. Deuteronomy prohibits images, even the naming and mental representation of an imagined father. The only way to represent God is gazing into a mirror. In my fused dreams, I saw rushing angels battling against huge calamities. An unjust God can't be perfect, emphasized the bravest of them in my dream. A God cried when rivers end. Fact is, they were alone, without hope of talking to the Father. Mr. God, who abandoned them as he abandoned those who fell into the veil of tears, wasn't there. And now broken silence took hold of the mirror's lips, and sadness went on dampening leaves until daybreak. There's a time to die in fireplaces where conscience smolders all alone.
Lovely words, and it makes me hope for more work from Carrillo in his native language and in translation.
Well, you know, Jaime just sent me a second book. So what I'm seeing is that he's in his early 70s, or maybe he's 69. And I think he's reworking manuscripts that he's put aside to pursue his critical work. And so I think we're very fortunate to have these new two books reaching us.
We encounter angels in these poems, in a mundane world, experiencing despair and boredom on earth. These are not the typical angels of a sacred text, coming to earth with a holy mission, messengers. They're rather homely and living a burdensome existence here on earth.
Right. You've said it correctly, Vincent. We always think of angels as messengers of God, playing different roles in the earthly hell, not the earthly paradise. What I especially liked about these two poems, and in fact the whole collection, is that he humanizes the angels, humanizes them to the point where, as you very well said, they're angels after the fall. And what I notice in the poems is the influence of Nicanor Parra, the great Chilean poet, the inventor of the anti-poem. These are poems that are stripped of rhetoric, and they communicate very directly without much artifice or poetic diction.
In Godless Angels, they are rushing and battling against huge calamities. And in both of these poems, angels are having a particularly hard time, and God seems to be largely absent in their struggle. How might we interpret the plight of these angels, their abandonment by God or gods? And should we read a connection at all to their appearance in both the poems?
Yeah, I mean, is God a man? Is God a woman? Is God alive? Is he active? Has he abandoned us? I think there's one line that, or a couple of lines that sort of speak about the role of angels on earth, but could also be a characterization of God. And this is from Hotels. Angels prefer to stay in their rooms listening to the radio on, or watching TV, trimming their toenails or ironing their enormous white wings. I sort of imagine that, or I visualize God perhaps in the same way that he, for those of us who believe that there was and is a God, and we look at the state of the world today, we have to well admit that God has abandoned us, and we wonder how this God spends his time, probably not much differently than the way these angels do in the hotels.
Boundaries are also expressed, imposed by someone or something outside of the control of the persona in the poems, and deep feelings of isolation, yet a rich interior life which is aspirational. I'm thinking of the places where light is found and light is mentioned in this poem. To paraphrase, light hidden in our caves or delivered to us specifically at twilight.
Yeah, that's a beautiful line. You know, the idea that twilight is like a fallen angel. It's a world of abandonment where we don't really see much of God's power and kindness active in the world. So I think the crisis of our perception of God is felt also very deeply by these angels who seem to be lost, moving around earth without any direction, unsure of their next move. These are very troubling poems, but at the same time, I feel that Jaime reveals a great imagination in trying to create a vision of angels in the year 2023.
On that subject, can we look at the scenes in this poem as allegory for social and political forces at work, including those which oppress?
Jaime has always staked out a very critical role in Guatemala. I live in New York. He lives in Stockholm. We're both Guatemalan born. We both feel a very deep connection with our homeland. The fact that we're not living in Guatemala gives us the ability to see our homeland in a very different way than our friends who live in Guatemala, certainly with a little bit more freedom and with certain rights to be critical. He has been extremely critical of Guatemalan rulers since before the armed conflict. I would say that the last time he would have been happy was during the government of Jacobo Arbenz back in from the 1950s, from 1950 to 1954, when the U.S. engineered a coup d'état that displaced Arbenz and basically has led to close to 70 years of chaos in Guatemala. So I think a lot of the elements that you see in the poem also reference the social and economic fabric of Guatemala. You know, things are changing in Guatemala right now. We had elections this year. We had primaries in June and a runoff in August. And three candidates who would have represented parties that were critical of the existing Yamatai regime were disqualified. The only party that was not disqualified was the Semilla or Seed Party led by Bernardo Arevalo. And somehow he qualified during the first elections. And then during the runoffs on August 19th, he was elected president by a 20-point margin. Guatemala has very strange election laws that don't permit the president-elect to take power for another 5 months. So Bernardo Arevalo won't take office until January. But in the meantime, what we call the Pacto de Corruptos, or the Pact of Corrupt Elements in Guatemala, are doing everything in their power to disqualify Arevalo, Arevalo's party, accusing them of fake signatures on their ballot registration and then creating fictitious people who have died and are no longer in this world, just attacking him mercilessly so that he can't take power. But recently, the indigenous population of Guatemala, which represents about 55% of the population, has been leading protests, blockading roads and highways, challenging the government so that they recognize that the people are against the corruption that is taking away their candidate.
The places where we find our angels, in politics, in resistance, sometimes.
Bernardo Arevalo is a kind of angel. I've met him. His father was president. Juan José Arevalo was president in Guatemala from 1944 to 1950. His father's government signaled the democratization of Guatemala after having a president who, Ubico, who styled himself after Mussolini and was an autocratic dictatorial president. So he comes from good blood. He comes from good genes. His policies are, for the most part, centrist. But in a country like Guatemala, to be in the center is to be a communist. Vincent, you might find that hard to believe, but even wearing a red shirt in Guatemala could elicit suspicions that you're a communist.
It occurs to me that poetry carries with it some special challenges for an author translator. We spoke about the cultural and political landscape surrounding the writer, the nuance of language and metaphors which do not avail themselves to literal translation. There's the well-known efficiency of the poetic language and the sounds of the native language, which may have no clear equivalencies in another language. Can you speak to the challenges you encountered and if you overcame these in the English language translation?
That's a wonderful introduction, Vincent, to talking about Jaime's language. When I first began translation and translating, I translated poetry. I translated the poetry of Enrique Lin, great Chilean poet, for New Directions, and then I edited and translated an anthology of Nicanor Parra, who I mentioned previously. I also work with Lewis Hyde, great writer and critic and translator, doing a small book of Spanish novelist Vicente Alexandre. The advantage, I would say that these poems of Jaime's pretty much translated themselves. I think that he's a practitioner without really knowing it of the poetry of William Carlos Williams, the idea of no ideas but in things, and speaking in the Spanish American diction that someone like Williams and Pound also. For me, the challenge in these poems was trying to figure out what Jaime meant by lines like imagining a global brain where the vestiges of a previous era was ruled by imagining an even older and more diffuse time. Basically trying to crack the nugget of what Jaime was saying. What I did is I sent him my translations. He had one or two small comments and clarifications. But in general, he was very happy with the versions. And Asymptote came up, the editor that I had who worked with me, with a couple of other clarifications that helped these poems be what they are. I totally believe in what my friend Sandy Taylor, who was a publisher of Curbstone Press, the idea of a brigade translation, in the sense that a translator has his name at the bottom of the page as the translator, but there are many, many people that are involved in the final version. In this case, the interventions of both Jaime and the editor were small. Still, I felt that they made the poems read so much better in English.
Certainly, with all respect to the original author, a translation becomes something of a wholly new work, doesn't it?
Exactly. And that's I think why readers across the globe anxiously await the next issue of Asymptote, because it's a true revelation.
I was hoping that you would read a portion of one of the poems in the original Spanish language, perhaps Godless Angels, there's a powerful closing end-stopped line that reads, in English, there's a time to die in fireplaces where conscience smolders all alone.
Sure. I'll read four of the stanzas. He tenido sueños fusionados donde vi ángeles que estaban en apuros luchando contra grandes infortunios. Un Dios injusto no puede ser perfecto, afirmaba el más osado de ellos en mi sueño. Un Dios que llore donde terminan los ríos. Lo más dramático es que estaban solos, sin posibilidad de comunicarse con el Padre. Mister Dios estaba ausente, los había abandonado como a todos los que caen en el valle de las lágrimas. Un silencio ya quebrado se apoderó de los labios del espejo y la tristeza continuó humedeciéndose las hojas hasta el amanecer. Hay un tiempo para morir en las chimeneas, donde humea solitaria la conciencia. I see the poet creating such a powerful vision, and I'm so glad that you chose those lines.
Any closing thoughts for young translators in the world?
You know, what I would wish is that, you know, I will continue to read Jaime Barrios Carrillo's work, but I also open it up to others, to younger translators, if they're interested in contacting me, perhaps helping me in the effort to translate Jaime's work. I'll give you my email address, if I may. It's filny@aol.com. So if any of your listeners feel that they want to read Jaime Barrios Carrillo's work in Spanish or to attempt to translate other poems of his, they can contact me.
Well, this seems quite the fitting place to end our conversation. Thank you, David Unger, for joining us from New York and for the translations that appear in this 50th issue of Asymptote, two poems by Jaime Barrios Carrillo. Thanks again.
Thank you, Vincent. I really enjoyed this conversation.
The Asymptote podcast is produced by me, Vincent Hofstack, with music courtesy of Epidemic Sound. My very special thanks to author-translator David Unger and Jaime Barrios Carrillo. Also, thanks to the editorial staff of the Asymptote Journal. To enjoy the work of these authors, as well as many others, visit asymptotejournal.com, the premier site for world literature in translation.